Hi, I'm Rob Brown, and I'm your host of this Accounting Influencers podcast. Every week, you get interviews and insights from leaders and influencers globally about growth, leadership, talent, succession, tech, performance, and those special things that make the good accountants and accounting firms great. Enjoy today's episode, and let's get started. Welcome to the show. I'm thrilled to have me today, Paul Winroe, technical partner at MHA McIntyre Hudson. Hello to you, Paul.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
We're great. Super to have you on the show, Paul. There'll be people that haven't come across you before, even though you're world famous. So tell us a bit about you, your areas of expertise, Paul, and how you got into this.
Yeah, sure. So I've got a long background in public sector audit, but for the last 10 years or so, I've been in broader audit. So I'm currently the technical partner at McIntyre Hudson, and I'm also the ethics partner. Prior to that, I've had a multitude of roles. MHA McIntyre Hudson is the UK member firm of Baker Tilly International. I joined MHA McIntyre Hudson from Baker Tilly International's global office, where I was their director of professional standards. That role incorporated leading the development of global audit methodology, rolling that methodology out to the member firms, redesigning the global audit quality program, running the ethics and independence for the network, and also global technical support and training. My current role is very similar to that, but in a UK context. Prior to joining the Baker Tilly network, I was at Grant Thornton for 14 years. I was on to come to Grant Thornton's international office as well, 3 years developing their global audit methodology, and I was the UK head of audit technical at Grant Thornton as well.
What was your first job?
Public sector trainee at KPMG.
Okay.
A long time ago.
You didn't even have a paper round before they launched you into KPMG.
Oh well, I did have a paper round for an awful long time. I was still delivering newspapers in my 20s.
And if you weren't an accountant, what do you think you might have been?
I mean, I have a PhD in paleontology. I always thought I would be a geologist, but okay. For one reason or another, when I graduated, I ended up going into accountancy. So,
well, certainly it sounds like from your technical expertise, you like the academic rigor of study and research and knowledge. Would that fit you?
Yeah, absolutely. Lifelong learning, I guess, is the phrase, isn't it? I mean, I'm currently doing a course on World War II, finished one on World War I not long ago. I've done all sorts of oddball courses. I've done open university courses. Yeah, certainly always looking to learn.
Yeah. Well, what kind of shape would you say the accounting profession is in right now? There's a lot going on, Paul, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There's quite a bit of negativity, I think, around the accounting profession at the moment. There's a bit of doom and gloom at times, like around some of the bad news stories in the press. But I'm not actually sure it's that bad. I don't think the accounting profession is in as bad a place as some might say, you know, notwithstanding those scandals that hit the press. I mean, the vast majority of audits don't have those issues. I always like to look on the positive side of things rather than necessarily focusing on the negatives. And, you know, the vast majority of audits are still done to a very high standard. There are sometimes things go wrong, as there are in every walk of life. But I don't think that necessarily means that underlying there is a massive issue with the accounting profession. Clearly, we do need to address audit quality, be that the reality of audit quality issues that do arise, possibly even more importantly, the perceptions around audit quality and the things that are covered in the press. So you'll see, for example, quite often regulators report to maybe negative about audit quality, but are the things the regulators identify always really matters of substance, or are they differences of opinion? Are they more an interpretation sometimes of how a regulator might see that an auditor should have done something? Part of that's driven by our standards being principles-based rather than rules-based. So if you've got principles-based standards, there's always that element of judgment involved in how you apply the standards. So a good friend of mine once compared regulation in audit to, say, pharmaceuticals or airlines, where they have very strict rules. So an airline will say, every 50th time you land that plane, you change its tyres. And the regulator goes along and says, right, it's landed 51 times. Did you change the tyres? Tick. And quite often, regulators can tend to take a little bit of a rules-based approach, whereas the auditing standards are more principles-based. So there isn't always a right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
So I do think sometimes the audit quality issues are more around maybe interpretation. And I also think that part of the issue around audit quality is that the complexity of accounting. Most of the regulators' findings around the world talk around estimates and impairments and all those sorts of complex accounting treatments and challenging a management's estimate. And again, who's right, who's wrong? Their estimates are based on assumptions. There's not necessarily a right or wrong answer. So it's quite difficult to pin down where audit quality issues really lie. There are the odd ones where it's quite clear somebody's not done the right thing. But in fairness to them, they've probably dealt well with all the really complicated stuff and somebody's just taken their eye off the ball, which is a big challenge.
Sure. Well, I just asked you what kind of shape the accounting profession is and got a very very thorough answer, which is testimony to your technical expertise and the depth of detail you go into. I had the privilege of conducting a series of 24 virtual panels with the leaders of global accounting networks over lockdown. And Ben Lloyd from Baker Tilly International appeared on a couple of our panels. And we asked those leaders of leaders, if you like, what response the accounting profession had made to COVID. How agile were they? How willing to change were they? And we know that COVID has been disruptive. Has it driven any technical changes, Paul? And if so, have the profession adapted to that well enough? Because things are not how they used to be, are they now?
No, and I actually think that's a great thing. I think it's been really quite refreshing on a professional level. Clearly, it's disastrous worldwide, but on a professional level, it's been really quite stimulating because it's forced us all to think differently. We can't just do what we did last year. Even if we wanted to, we can't. And similarly, the clients aren't doing what they did last year. So certainly from my perspective, I've been really impressed with how the profession as a whole has responded to COVID and developed new ways of doing things. You would never have thought that you could do an audit without going to the client's premises, but we can. You would never have thought we could attend a stock take without physically going to the stock take, but we can. It's been really refreshing how people have responded. I think what it has done, a lot of particularly mid-tier firms, I guess, have been looking at technology and innovation for a number of years. Let's do things differently. Let's implement this. Let's have a client portal where we can share electronic information. And we've talked about it and maybe not done it. Whereas this year, it's forced us to do it. It's actually forced our hands. You know, the profession's responded well to that and the clients have responded well to that. So it's shown the profession to be agile, which I think is really good. And with the reforms that are coming in the future, that puts us in a good place.
And you're in a leadership role. You're on the Accounting Leaders podcast right now. Is your leadership more leading people and mentoring them, or is it more leading policies and procedures and data and change like that?
I think there's a mix of all, which is one of the things I really like, is variety. But predominantly in my new role, it's predominantly the policies, procedures and the data and the structures, rather than the audit teams themselves. If the audit partners out on the coalface will be doing that.
But there must be up and coming Paul Winrose that need mentoring and nurturing and coaching to be what you are when you move on.
Certainly within our technical team, there are people that we're looking to bring through. There are people within the audit practice that I'm keen to start to mentor and work closely with, some of the high-flying managers, if you like, because of their careers as well.
You sound a very passionate guy, Paul, and when I see you on the external profile, if you like, with your social media and the stuff that you post, your thought leadership, you seem to really enjoy what you do. What do you love most about your roles?
It is absolutely that variety. I often describe myself as a bit like a Victorian scientist.
Okay.
So a modern scientist will spend their entire life on one test tube, you know.
Yeah.
I prefer to look at the whole of science. So in that context, for me, the job is so varied and has been for a number of years. And it's that variety that gets me out of bed in the morning. If I was doing the same old, I wouldn't find that very interesting and exciting at all. So having the breadth of what I do, the breadth of the people I deal with is really important. When I joined MHA McIntyre Hudson, we are going through a period of transformation, frankly. We're winning new work in listed markets and things like that. That attracts me to the role is that's all new. Let's go and do something new that we've not done before. So variety and always having a fresh challenge. I do get bored very easily.
Well, uneducated people, let's call them that, might look on a career in accounting, particularly the technical stuff that you get involved with, and see it's quite boring. But you don't sound like a boring or a bored person.
No. Well, I don't know about boring. That's what you'd rather ask other people. But no, like I say, I mean, I do get bored easily. So if it really was like that, I wouldn't be in it.
Sure.
And I think it's because it's always changing. If I look back over, what is it now, 27 years, I think I've been doing this. You know, I started out doing audits on paper and LibreArch files. And then we introduced the computer. There was one computer in the office at the time. And we still did things on memos and carbon copies and things. But I think from that to where we are today, the change and the constant change has been phenomenal. And I look to the future. I always say I'm going to retire at 60, so I've got 8 years left. And the next 8 years, to be honest, with the audit reforms, with technology changing, with big data and data-driven audits, it's never going to stand still. But I really get a buzz out of that. I would not want to do something where I'm going and doing the same thing day after day.
Let's talk about risk, Paul. It's not a word generally associated with accountancy, apart from risk management is really important in dealing with your clients. But we don't have all the data, particularly in COVID times. There's a lot of uncertainty around and predictability. You've heard of the word VUCA, possibly. Volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity. There must be times when you get things wrong or have to take a risk or take a punt. Is there any big risks you've taken in your your journey?
Yeah, I think to my mind, the obvious big risk that I took, being in public sector for at the time about 20 years, and I'm SIPPA qualified, so purely public sector background, and always felt that I was pigeonholed into that. I'd gone so far in my career that I didn't really have anywhere else to go. I was just kind of going to carry on doing that forever.
So this was a career risk then, was it?
It was, yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I've said I get bored. So
yeah. So you came to a fork in the road, did you almost?
Yes, so an opportunity presented itself to become head of audit technical at Grant Thornton, which meant head of audit technical for the whole firm, not just public sector.
So you're now in private practice.
Exactly. Then I was into the commercial and then the private world, which I'd never been involved in. So taking that step was a huge risk, but I always see risk and opportunity as opposite. It was a huge risk, but what an opportunity it presented for me to do something different.
How different was it for you when you dipped your toes into that world?
To be honest, the rules and regulations are different, but again, audit's audit, right? So in that respect, it wasn't a massive leap. The challenges were more around the rules and regulations, you know, things like Companies Act and all that sort of stuff, which I'd never dealt with. But then equally, I was leading the department, not necessarily needing to get into that level of detail. Similarly, today, I've got a really strong team who know all of that stuff. My role is to guide and lead them through the next few years rather than necessarily worry about that sort of thing. So I think as long as you've got the strong team behind you and to support you in your learning on it, and then that worked quite well. It was uncomfortable for a little while.
It was a risk that paid off.
Yeah. And when I look at where I've been since then, yeah, it absolutely did pay off.
Yeah. Have you ever failed, Paul?
Yeah, there's an example I often use when I talk to my teams. It's 20 years ago this year, I think it was. I was working at PwC. I'd just transferred down to their London office and I was desperate to make a good impression. And every time somebody said, oh, Paul, can you take this on? I said yes. And I kept saying yes and I kept saying yes and I kept saying yes. And then all of a sudden there was university audit season. I had way too many audits, frankly. Yeah. It was just ridiculous, but I just kept saying yes. As a result of that, I missed the filing deadlines for two very small subsidiaries, frankly. It was made pretty clear that that was more or less me done at PwC.
Wow.
That was a pretty horrible experience and the conversation with the partner. But as ever, you learn from your mistakes. That's the main thing to do. And the thing that I really took from that was I always used to see saying no as a weakness. But I now see it's one of anybody's biggest strengths. So I say to my teams, if you are at capacity, say so. I will not see it as a weakness. I will see it as a big strength. If you put your hand up and say, look, Paul, no, I just can't take that on.
It's a very good point. I've just done a webinar today for a mid-tier accounting firm for their people on mental resilience. And part of it, we talked about leadership and the importance of being a little bit vulnerable, admitting a weakness, because if you pretend that you are coping well and everything's going great for you, that doesn't inspire the people around you in a way that are struggling and genuinely are not able to cope with what's happening. So I suppose you were in that role where you've got to say yes, you want to impress, you dare admit a weakness, and that was your downfall.
Yeah, that's absolutely where it headed. One of the other lessons I learned during my career at different stages, the old phrase, the graveyards are full of indispensable people. I think that's another important lesson. And it's been proved time and time again in the last 27 years at work and outside of work that nobody is indispensable. Nobody is that important. So don't take yourself too seriously as well. And I think that's partly why a lot of people will always portray that I'm fully in control, because I can't let people realize that I'm not, because I'm the leader and I'm indispensable and I have to portray that. I don't think that's right.
No, that's very good. And when you were getting that dressing down, Paul, you'd failed, you'd missed the deadlines. What was your approach there? Are you hands up? I really messed up. Were you looking for excuses? Were you ashamed? How did that feel?
It probably a bit of the last two. I mean, I was devastated at myself, and ashamed is probably the right word. I was definitely more of the hands up, look, yeah, okay, I screwed up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yes, there was an excuse that they kept giving me work, but it was up to me to say no. So, I took full responsibility. It was my screw up. It wasn't anybody else's.
Mm.
And again, I think that's an important thing to do, isn't it? Is to take responsibility. You like to take the credit for the good times, and I do like to take the credit for the good times, but you also got to take responsibility when things aren't necessarily as good as they could be.
Yeah, that seems fair. And let's drag your self-esteem up now by asking you about some good times. And is there anything you're particularly proud of on your watch?
Yeah, it's interesting. The last 10 years has been fascinating because in 2012, Grant Thornton were very successful in the public sector market. We took in 300 new staff from the Audit Commission and we went through a massive exercise integrating those people, developing the new audit methodology. We took it as an opportunity to say, right, let's really make our audit methodology work for public sector. We're now 40% of the market. Let's make the most of this opportunity. We wrote and delivered a training course for 400 people all in one go, which everybody said it can't be done. And we said, no, this is the way we're going to do it. And we delivered that training course and it was a huge success. And I sat there on the last night of that training course with a beer in my hand in the bar. And I thought, that's the peak of my career.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm whatever I was at the time, 44. Where do I go from here? And actually, ever since then, I've just keep reaching new peaks. For me, that's been amazing because I genuinely thought that's me done now. You know, all I'm just going to see out the next however many years doing whatever it is I do. And then, as I say, this opportunity at Head of Audit Technical came along and it was like, well, here's a chance to actually do something fresh and different. That integration of the Audit Committee exhibition people was a huge success, and I'm really proud of that. Since then, developing a global audit methodology for the first time at Grant Thornton International, phenomenal experience. Going to Baker Tilly International, finishing off their audit methodology, which was kind of in process when I joined, but finalising their global audit methodology, then rolling it out to over half the network. That was a huge achievement. We completely rewrote the quality improvement approach for Baker Tilly as a global network. And smaller scale things, like we used to do a training course that was 3 days attended by about 20 people. And over the course of the 3 years I was there, it got to over 100 last time we ran that course. There's all those things that have grown one after the other. And now at McIntyre Hudson, it's all about the future and audit reform and challenger firms.
Well, yeah, you don't give a sense that you're winding down. So do you sense that your best years are still ahead of you, Paul?
Yeah, ironically, I do. I mean, I always do constantly think that the best years are ahead. I look at audit reform. Yes, it's a huge challenge, but wow, to be involved in leading a firm through audit reform in the next few years is going to be superb.
Yeah.
And I just don't see the way the world is and the way audit going and business is going. I just don't see that constant cycle of change is going to end, certainly not in my time.
And you certainly give the impression that you feel it's a responsibility, not just to do a good job, but you're putting content out there, aren't you? You're coming on interviews like this, you're writing on LinkedIn, you feel it's part of your role, maybe to be that professor or academic that you were, but teaching other people and bringing others through and sharing your knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's right. And over the last 2 or 3 years with the international roles, it's kind of a responsibility to the profession rather than necessarily my team, my job, my firm. It's trying to contribute to the wider profession, if you like. Having the opportunity to contribute to the development of a profession, something I never thought I'd have.
Yeah.
Yeah, growing up on the streets of Bolton was not something that I ever thought I would be doing.
And as you get your crystal ball out, Paul, we're in for some tough times. We know that. This recession coming, high unemployment. What do you think is key for accounting firms or the profession generally over the next few years?
Yeah, if we look at the accounting profession, the audit profession, it's this thing about once and for all addressing the quality point. And I do think some of the lessons we've learned in the last calendar year will probably help us with that. Finally nailing down the expectation gap. We've tried, I think, for years to say, let's explain the expectation gap. If people don't understand it, we just need to explain what it is we do. It's a growing groundswell of realisation that maybe it's a bit more than that. And I saw an excellent slide. It was on an ACCA event. It was somewhere it came up online. But it actually brought the expectation gap down into three chunks. One was the knowledge gap. So that's what public think we do versus what we actually do. And then you've got the performance gap of what we actually do to what we're supposed to do. And then finally, you've got the evolution gap, which is what we're currently supposed to do to what people think should do.
Very good.
And I think trying to break down that expectation gap into those chunks and trying to work out a sensible way to address that would be great. The audit reform agenda is going to be fantastic for the accounting profession. I think you gives us a huge opportunity. But I think probably the overriding thing for me is what I often refer to as the financial reporting supply chain or the audit quality supply chain is around everybody's responsibility for audit quality. It's not just auditors. And that's not in any way to try and sort of push away responsibility and say, oh, it's not us, it's everybody else. We obviously have a massively crucial role. But somehow addressing across the profession that standard setters, accounting standard setters, does IFRS really need to be that complex question mark? Maybe it does. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure. Do auditing standards have to be as complicated as they are? And currently the IAASB is looking at less complex entities and how you audit them as a separate thing. Then you've got the preparers of the financial statements. They've got a critical role. How can we work with preparers of financial statements to sort of make everything work better? And I always say in this sort of context, you know, when you think about ethical standards, don't forget, if a preparer of financial statements didn't commit a fraud, we couldn't fail to find it. So there's an issue there that needs directors and audit committee. It's really good that Bryden has commented on in his recommendations the importance of directors and audit committees in audit quality. Obviously, audit is we have clearly ultimate responsibility for it, and regulators as well. Some of the stuff I was saying earlier about, is it principles based, is it rules based, is it just interpretation that's the issue? So I think addressing that whole sort of financial reporting supply chain to drive quality is really important. And then the last thing I think is probably the technology. We've started to adapt to that much better this year because we've had to. It's now pushing the boundaries a bit more on data and technology and innovating the audit and doing it differently.
There's a lot for you to do in the next 8 years in 1 week. You better get a
I might need an extra few weeks at the end, you never know.
And do you see yourself, as we come to a close, as a disruptor and a change agent and an agitator, or are you a pacifier and a diplomat and a mediator in your approach?
Oh, I think I'd definitely fall in the first category. As I said, I'd rather sort of throw out the vaguely controversial comment and try and get a response.
Throw a grenade in there and...
So that's definitely me.
Well, this has been great, Paul. If people want to pick your brains on stuff, have a conversation with you, find out out more about what you're doing, what's a good way for them to get in touch with you?
You can find me via LinkedIn. I'm definitely on there, or on the MHA McIntyre Hudson website, and there'll be an email link on there as well that people can contact me that way.
Brilliant. And would you leave us with perhaps a bit of advice you've been given or a personal philosophy for success that you have that might inspire some of the accountants listening?
Probably three things. One is put the team first. It's not about you, it's about your team. I've worked in some tremendous teams. I've built two or three really, really good teams that I've been really proud of. I've also worked in the odd dysfunctional team, and I know which I prefer. So I think team first is absolutely critical. I think when it comes to, we talked earlier on about risk and opportunity, see the positive and the opportunity rather than necessarily the risk. We're looking to become a challenger firm. Yes, of course, there are risks associated with that, but what a tremendous opportunity. So let's manage the risk in a way that gives us the chance to seize the opportunities. And then I think the last one is that thing about when I had that choice 10 years ago, jumping out of my comfort zone and out of my box. Continually stretch yourself, go beyond your comfort zone. If you're at the edge of your comfort zone, you've not gone far enough sometimes. And I think just take that chance, stretch your boundaries and be the best you can.
Love that. Well, Paul Renaud, that's been superb. Thank you so much for your time and your insights today.
Thank you. Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.